Welcome to Year 2 of the Funding Love Podcast. I'm Mallory Elrod.
And I'm Caitlin Duckworth. We are two adoptive moms that seek to love, support, and elevate all corners of the adoption triad, including adoptive families, adoptees, and birth parents.
We do that through honest conversation with both expert and everyday voices about all things adoption and more, all while running our nonprofit, Funding Love.
We create post-adoption experiences that strengthen bonds, build community, and restore people.
We are Funding Love.
The podcast. Welcome back to the Funding Love Podcast. This is episode 101. I am your co-host, Kate, and today we have Melissa Corkum with us. Melissa is an adoptee, an adoptive mom, co-founder of Adoption Wise, an Enneagram coach, and that is just to name a few things. She is a wealth of knowledge, and today we are tackling the topic of the Enneagram and adoption. It is a very interesting and unique conversation, honestly, a conversation we've never had yet on the podcast. Mel and I were kind of geeking out about it because we love personality tests. So if you at all know about the Enneagram, love the Enneagram, this episode is for you. Hope y'all enjoy. Take a listen. Welcome, Melissa, to episode 101 of the Funding Love Podcast. We are so great to have you. We are so glad to have you and glad you joined us. Welcome.
Well, congrats on 100 episodes, ladies. I'm so glad to be here.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. You
know, we are pretty excited about that. Not going to lie. That number, whatever reason, felt good. So
you know,
thank you for that.
Time flies when you're talking about adoption, right?
Yeah.
That is true, I guess.
Well,
right?
Melissa, I know I have been following you for quite a while on Instagram, and mm-hmm. I get your Adoption Wise emails, signed up for those to my inbox all the time, and I love those. But for our listeners that might not know you, why don't you give yourself a little introduction beyond what we've already said and tell us how you're connected to the adoption community?
Yeah, so I am an adult adoptee. I was adopted from South Korea as an infant. I have two siblings, also adopted into my family of origin. None of us share significant amounts of DNA that we know of. And my husband and I live just north of Baltimore, and we have six kids through birth and adoption. So adoption's just a big part. And then, like you mentioned, Mal, I co-founded an organization called Adoption Wise. We do post-adoption services, kind of our, I don't know, our niche, if you will, is mm-hmm. something called blocked care. So we really serve kind of discouraged adoptive families. And yeah, so I feel like I do like eat, breathe, sleep adoption these days.
But, yes.
Yeah, that's, I know. That's awesome. So you are post-placement, which is so big on our hearts here at Funding Love, too, is the post-placement care and support and all of that. So that's awesome.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think we're going to have to just have you come back on and do a whole episode on blocked care, because reading about that and mm-hmm. learning about that too is like so important. But today's episode is going to be very fun because I love to talk about people's personalities, and I already was wanting to do an episode on either the Enneagram yes. or like the color personalities and how they are the filter of how we see through the world, how we view and experience our world. And then I saw you posting about Enneagram. I think you do Enneagram coaching, and how that your experience with adoption or view of adoption can differ even based on your personality. So I'm excited to jump into this episode. And talk about all of that. So, Melissa, share with us a little bit about that journey for you. So, how did you learn about the Enneagram and what drew you to that?
Well, like all fun things that I found it on a podcast. And
yeah.
And I didn't know anything about it. And it wasn't even an Enneagram specific podcast. It might have been Annie F. Downs's podcast. And she talks about the Enneagram a lot. And
oh, I love her.
I know.
She's one of my regular podcasts that I listen to. It's amazing.
She's so great. Yeah. And I remember her talking about it, and I was like, what is that? And so, you know, curiosity, the internet, we have access to all the things. So I just jumped right in, and I did a lot of things wrong. There are a lot of misnomers and false information floating around about the Enneagram, but I am curious about personality and things, maybe not as knowledgeable as you are, Mal, but in early 2020, as the world was kind of shutting down, I had an opportunity to get certified as an Enneagram coach. And I thought, this is going to be my COVID project. And I did it with my business partner, Lisa Qualls. And we both had gained so much helpful knowledge and insight by learning more about it, and just thought this is something that we could really bring to the adoption community. As far as we knew, no one was really kind of putting those two things together. So it's a small part of what we do. It's definitely a part of how we help parents think about their journey and the hard parts of their journey, including blocked care. And yeah, so the rest is history, and we've just kind of deeper and deeper. I was able to study under Suzanne Stabile in 2021 in one of her cohorts. Mm. And so that was just a huge honor and just took me so much deeper. And yeah, so I'm all in.
So what, if you were to like suggest a book or like a resource for somebody who's like, listen, Enneagram, I've heard about this, but how do I, like, what is it? Like, what book would you say or resource would you say this is a great place to like dabble in or learn or get truth about it? Because you're right, there's a lot of things out there that are kind of not necessarily super accurate with it. So I'm curious what you would recommend.
Yeah, well, Suzanne has a great primer called The Road Back to You. There's a lot of them. There's another one called What's Your Enneatype? I don't know the authors, but I know it's two authors, and I think one of them's named Josh. So it's got a really pretty colorful color. Beatrice Chestnut came out with a kind of a more basic Enneagram book. She's most known for The Complete Enneagram, which is like not really a great place to start. But she came out with a newer, more basic book. And I guess this is probably a good time to say the Enneagram isn't a test, like so many other personality assessments that might have been built around assessments, whether that be Myers-Briggs or StrengthsFinders or the color or whatever, DISC. All of those kind of have an assessment that they were built with. And the Enneagram just goes back a lot further. It's a more oral tradition, and it's based on what motivates you, not your behavior. And that's just really hard to tease out in an online test, no matter how many questions you answer. And I think the beauty of that, even though it doesn't lend itself to many shortcuts, unfortunately, but it does ask us to kind of start the work early. And so I always tell people, like, knowing your type actually isn't like the goal even, right? The whole thing's a journey. And when you figure out what your type is, then that's a super helpful part of the journey. But you can do a lot of work, learn a lot about yourself, and really still become a much better person even before you land on what your type actually is.
Yes.
But isn't there a test though? There is like a
test
that you
take,
right?
There are many tests.
So, and I think you're right. Like when you take the test and the idea is, you know, figure out what type you are is what motivates you. Is once I took the test after I kind of read through every description. And so then I was answering the questions as like I wanted them to be answered, you know, as I was like hoping I would find myself into a certain type. So I was like, oh, if I answer that, oh, that's going to be like a
Because you start. So yeah, you start getting.
You start doing that.
You can recognize what the tests are trying to get you.
Correct. And I was like, I don't like this. I don't like this because I'm like, I don't know how honest I'm actually being with my answers because I can see what they're trying to ask me. So I felt better after I read through all of them. And then I was like kind of honest with myself of like, okay, these feel like me. And especially when now the Enneagram is, I know like this much, but when you have like a wing to it, it makes it easier for me to like settle on the type because I'm like, well, that's not always me because I'm a little bit this way. But then when, you know, if you're Enneagram, for example, I feel like I'm an Enneagram 1, wing 2. So I'm a little bit of 2. And then Mal was even telling me before you jumped on, she's like, oh, yeah. But then like when you're in a bad place or like you're in an unhealthy, I can see you become an 8. And I'm like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
But because there's so much.
Correct.
So it is so deep, but it is knowing all of those things. Now being a parent, I feel like if you know what your child is, you parent to that. And it's so much more, I feel, and then you become a, I know how I respond to certain things so you can better yourself. There's so much benefit to knowing personality stuff. Now, I digress, but that I did want to say, because when you're saying it isn't really a test, I was like, but I feel like I've taken a test and I don't know what's your opinion on that? Should people take a physical written test?
So tests are at their best 60 to 70% accurate. So it's just not great, right? It's an okay place to start, but
sure.
Like my pet peeve is when people are like, oh, I took the test and I'm a blah, blah, blah. And then they tell me all the reasons why they're probably not that. And so then they don't believe in the Enneagram. Right.
Right.
Like, oh, well, that's not the way. Like, so I think another important thing to say is the Enneagram is what we call self-affirming, right? Because it's based on motivation, you're the only one who knows what your motivations are. So a test can certainly help you maybe narrow down. It's a great conversation starter. But when I do work with clients, we are clear of tests. I just think there's so many other things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that pigeonholes us. Like you mentioned, Caitlin, there's what we call this dynamic movement on the Enneagram, which again is not Enneagram 101, but it just suffice it to know that the Enneagram makes space for the fact that we are not in a box, and that what mm-hmm. we, that stress affects us, feeling safe affects us. There's all these different layers of other psychology that complements the Enneagram and can get layered on. And so all of that movement means that just knowing your type and learning just about that type isn't really all that helpful, because when you factor in what we call the lines, which is what Mal was mentioning, and the wings, like you have access to five of the types. You have access to your dominant type, your wings, and your lines. And so that's five out of the four numbers that you should know about anyway. And then you add in the people that you're living with and where they might be coming from and their other four things. And so you might as well just learn about all nine.
Correct. Yes. So, mm-hmm. Caitlin, you think you're a wing, one wing two.
Correct.
I feel as though I am a nine with a hard wing one. But it's funny because when I would take the online tests, I always came out a three. And then once I read the book, that was The Road Back to You, I was like, oh my gosh, no, I'm a nine. I just must be in a good mood when I'm taking that test. Because it is funny how the tests, it is based more like on behaviors than like your motivations or something. I don't know what it is, but I come out a three a lot of times when I take online tests, and I'm very much more identify with that nine. So what is your number, Melissa?
I identify as a seven. That's my dominant number. I have a really strong move to an eight. Okay. So the thing about wings is you don't have to have a wing. You don't have to identify with a wing. Some people have really big wings. Some people have itty bitty tiny wings. Mm-hmm. And there is some theory that says that if you have one wing early in life, then you tend to add the second wing at some point, especially as you do more work and get more balance. So that whole thing is dynamic. So a little bit, I push back against people who are like, I'm a blank wing this, because I think it's not that definitive that, you know, that your wing is so much part of your identity, because I do see it changing.
It shifts
over time, your dominant type doesn't. How you are motivated doesn't shift. And one of my favorite Enneagram activities is to like kind of come up with a situation that a lot of people have lived through and ask them how they would have behaved in that situation. You'll find that a lot of people, especially if it's a kind of a closed situation where there's really only like one or two ways to behave in that situation or act, like decisions to make. And then you start asking people why. And then you realize that a lot of times we're doing the same things, but for completely different reasons.
So to help people understand like a wing, because when I was first learning about it, I was like, okay, what is it? For a wing, it's like, and correct me if I'm wrong, you typically wing like either direction from your dominant number. So say I'm a one, I would either wing nine or two.
Right. So you can't be like a seven wing two. That's not a thing.
Right. It's usually up or down from where you are. Okay.
Right. It's like your neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, so my husband and I read that book together, and I felt like, wow, our marriage and
The Road Back to You.
The Road Back to You. And like finding out our core motivations and like what words affect us. I don't know if you've heard of the study, Melissa, of I said this, you heard that. And talking about the way that people perceive even the same exact words, it was so helpful in our marriage, and just helping me to know even the at the core of what my husband is feeling or why he's behaving that way. But it also felt like it was drawn by, and you'll have to remind me of what it's called, but the shame, fear, anger kind of reactions, whereas like I am anger, that also helped my husband to kind of narrow down on his as well, because he was like, oh no, I definitely identify with the shame. Like, I feel shameful. And I'm like, and I'm angry. Like, I'm just like, and so it kind of also helped us to hone down. But what are those called? Remind me again of what that's called in the Enneagram.
Yeah. So there's lots of groupings of three. So, you know, nine main motivations, and then there's threes all over Enneagram theory. And the grouping you're talking about, we often call triads. And okay. Triads tell us a couple different things. They tell us something about our centers of intelligence. So this is, again, psychology that was independent of the Enneagram, but layers perfectly. There are three centers of intelligence in psychology. We have your gut, your head, and your heart. Mm. And so those things, eight, nines, and ones, are what we call the gut triad. And that also identifies the three kind of types who have the same, what we call core emotion. So that would be anger. Twos, threes, and fours are what we call the feeling triad, and their core emotion is shame. And five, six, and seven are the thinking triad, and their core emotion is fear. And you'll also find that in the Enneagram world, we use very commonly used English words, but define them a little bit differently. So, like, I can already hear people going, well, I'm a five and I don't identify with anxiety, or I'm a seven and I don't identify with anxiety, or I'm a one and I'm never angry. So there's always these like nuances to how those core emotions show up based on your core motivation. Yeah. So there's a lot more that could be said, but that's kind of the basic, that there's these like three triads, groupings of numbers.
Yeah. So that's like a lot of information, but it's really cool. And I hope that listeners that don't really understand what we're talking about, that you kind of dig in and learn more for yourself. But let's like take all of this that we've talked about and bring it into the adoption world, because I feel like being a part of the triad, all of us here, we can see how in different ways the different corners of the adoption triad, the adoptive family, the birth family, the adoptee, a lot of times can be driven apart by some issues. And then we all know that it's better when we come together, but it's better when we understand, when we listen to each other's stories, we give space for each other's feelings, emotions, thoughts, and have compassion for that. And I feel like something that really helps us to have compassion for our neighbor, for the people that are around us, is understanding what we're talking about with the Enneagram. I feel like when you understand how they're perceiving their world, it helps us to have compassion and grace for listening to their story with a more open mind than just being like, well, that's different from me, I disagree, shut it down. So I don't know, it feels like it's a blessing to be able to view people's stories from a different perspective than your own, and it helps us to grow as individuals. So would you agree with that? Do you feel like in your experience with talking to adoptive parents or other adult adoptees, birth parents, do you feel like when they get a grasp on this Enneagram stuff, it's helpful for them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think if we were to ask anyone, are we all different? Everyone would be like, well, of course we're all different. And I think with that, we still hold these things that we assume are universally true. Of course, we're all different. And if I see that person over there who needs help, surely everyone would notice it and feel the need to go step in. We're all different, but surely if you have an opinion about something that was really important to you, you would share it. You know, like there's all these things, right? And the Enneagram tells us that for a variety of reasons, neither of those things are true.
Right.
Like for you, Mal, you think, of course we're all different, and surely this thing would make everybody angry. Or your husband's thinking, we're all different, but everyone must feel shame in this situation because we only know ourselves, and we're thinking, I can't imagine any other way to view that thing. And so I think, again, even if you are still years into figuring out what your dominant type is. And in full disclosure, I told the world I was a one for years because I fit a lot of the personalities. The people in my world were telling me they thought I was a one, like all the things. And that's not how I'm motivated.
Wow.
So, but just starting to learn about the different motivations and the different centers of intelligence and how people take in information and how they process it. Just hearing other people's stories using that language, all of a sudden I was like, oh my gosh, like I could never imagine experiencing the world that way. And even just hearing someone else say that, all of a sudden just opened up this world of possibilities of like, oh, there are some things that I'm not considering or some things that I'm taking as universal truth that actually aren't. And that, even just that slight paradigm shift has completely busted open my world to just pause and given me a lot more to be curious about as I'm watching other people experience their stories, talk about their stories, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm curious then, you know, because you of course meet with a lot of adoptive families and you're in the adoption space. You are an adoptee yourself and you are an adoptive mom. I'm curious, like, how have you seen, like, families use this Enneagram to their benefit as they are parenting or processing or in a tough spot in an adoption journey, post or pre or whatever it is? Or even you as an adoptee, how do you feel like you view your story based on your Enneagram type versus a different Enneagram type?
So let me start by saying the Enneagram journey is so personal. And as soon as you learn about it, your first inclination is going to be to type your kids, your husband, your partner, your best friend, your coworkers, all the things.
Yeah. And because it's so much fun to do that.
I know. And it's not our place. We'll do it, but I would say keep it to yourself.
Okay.
You know, like it's not our job to walk into our office the next day and be like, oh my gosh, you guys, I learned about the Enneagram and you're a two and you're a three and bubble, you know, and same thing with our kids. And because it's this internal journey and it's so personal and personality in a lot of ways doesn't really start to develop until we're a little bit older, until we start to differentiate a little bit more from our family of origin. It's kind of like the going thing that we also don't do Enneagram work with kids. And there's kind of, you know, a lot of gray areas to like, when can like mature teenagers start to think about these things? And there are a different set of three buckets that we haven't talked about called stances that I think are the one thing we can probably make the best educated guess about for people that we don't know, because they're based on the most kind of outward facing behavior. And that gives us enough information about the people that we live with that we can, you know, make adjustments. And like I said, even if you just think and start to realize all the nine ways that people can see the world, even if you don't know the way your child is seeing the world or your spouse, if it's different than the way you see the world, you can at least hold some possibilities about. Oh, well, I wonder if their time orientation is different than mine. I wonder if their center of intelligence is different than mine, and that would change the way we're seeing that. So I'll just say that as like a disclaimer.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I got so excited about adoption and the Enneagram is because I grew up obviously as an adoptee pre like social media and the internet. I'm kind of in that like Xennial generation where we went through school and college without social media, but got it so close to our like early, you know, still at the tail end of our development that we still kind of can navigate it like natives, more or less. So I grew up knowing some other adoptees, but not having a lot of tools to talk a lot about it. I thought I was a pretty content and happy adoptee. Like I didn't have big feelings about my adoption. I still don't have really big feelings about like belonging or my adoption or how I fit in the US or in my adoptive family. And I didn't think a lot about my birth family. I thought a lot about Korea, but more just out of curiosity and because the food's good. And when we became adoptive parents and Facebook groups were blowing up and I started hearing more adoptee stories, there were a lot of stories of heartache and hurt and grief and really big, more negative feelings. And those are, and I think a little bit still are, the loudest voices on social media. And so, interestingly, my shame happened then. I started thinking, oh, well, maybe I'm a bad adoptee. Like, maybe I'm a bad adoptee because I never think about my country of origin. Maybe I'm a bad adoptee because I don't think about my birth parents on my birthday. Maybe I'm, and so I kind of had like an identity crisis as an adoptee because I was like, there's all these people out here who are really concerned about the, like, lots of things in adoption. And I've never, I don't naturally think that way. Now I've come a long way. Like, there's a lot more balance in my story now about how I feel about adoption ethics and all the things, but it doesn't change that as a seven, there are a couple things about sevens. One is that we tend to reframe feelings in real time so that they're positive because we hate sitting in negative emotions, which means that literally things that are happening to us that are negative, we're reframing them so quickly in real time that sometimes we forget that negative things happened to us. It's a weird, it's like a superpower, and it's also bad, right? Because it means we're suppressing a lot of grief and negativity because we can so quickly turn it around. It's like hyper optimism. The other thing is that out of the three orientations to time, past, present, and future, we're future oriented, which means in general, at rest, our brain is thinking 1,000 years away. We're very big picture visionaries, always wondering like what the next thing is. And we process information with our head first, logic.
Okay.
And never the human, like, never feelings. It's like thinking, doing, thinking, doing, thinking, doing, doing, thinking, doing, thinking, and feeling hopefully never.
Right.
Yeah. So if you take all of those things and then I connect them to the way that I process my adoption story, then it's like, oh, well,
makes
I don't
so
think
much sense.
Right. My adoption story made sense in my head, so I didn't have a lot of questions about it. I don't think about my birth family because they are firmly in my past, as far as I know, and I'm constantly thinking about the future. So I wasn't really thinking a whole lot about what my birth mother was thinking when she gave me. Like, I was so focused on like what the next big thing is, and I reframe even hard things in real time. So whatever I felt that was hard about my adoption in my childhood, I've reframed it and forgotten about it. Like, so that will have to come up in therapy at some other time, right?
And yeah, so, like, in an effort to not feel?
In
that
an effort
where it
to not
from?
Feel bad things. Yeah. I'm happy to feel bad happy things, right?
Sure.
And so, yeah, I mean, and so all of a sudden I went click, click, click. No wonder I can't relate. And I wonder if some of the louder voices that we're hearing on adoption are feelings triad people, right? They're feeling, and there's a number on the Enneagram that doesn't ever get to logic naturally, just like I don't ever get to feelings naturally. And I wonder if their time orientation is more in the past, you know, like all of these different things. And so that made me be able to hold space for all those stories. I never felt like they were invalid. I just couldn't relate to them. Yeah. And so all of that, as I help adoptees process their stories, it helps to make sense of some of those things. Like, I also think that in not all cases, but in a lot of cases, adoptees who struggle with identity are probably individuals that would have struggled with identity without adoption in their story.
Mm. Yeah.
But an adoption in your, like a relinquishment in your past, if you're already going to be prone to identity issues, like that will blow that wide open.
For sure. Mm. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that does make sense. That is who you are. But now that adoption is, you know, the adoption is part of your story. So that's where
another layer,
the layer comes in. Yeah. And that's where that is going to be focused and you're going to draw to. That makes sense.
So is this time the like one you're referencing of, I haven't heard of this past, present, future orientation. Are those in blocks of threes as well? So does that fit that three structure as well?
So not those three, a different set of three. So
okay.
Ones, twos, and four. No, let me start that over. I'll start with past. Nines, fours, and fives are okay. past-oriented, and they're also what we call the withdrawing stance, which means that if the world's blowing up next to them, instinctively, they tend to withdraw, and their reference point is internal, themselves. Like, they have a very active inner world. It doesn't mean that they can't choose, like, with work, act differently. Again, so, like, this, think about, like, what your automatic, like, less worked on self would have done, right? Ones, twos, and sixes are tied to the present in terms of time. And I like to call them the responsive stance. They've often called been called the dependent stance. And the responsive language comes from Joey Shuey, who's Suzanne's oldest daughter. And that analogy is, if the world's blowing up next to them, they can't help but respond because they're responsive to things and their reference point is outside of themselves. So they're relying on data from other people around them to kind of see how they're doing, see their next move, those types of things.
Okay.
So that's what are those numbers? One, two, and six?
One, two, and six.
Okay.
And threes, sevens, and eights are, I prefer the word independent stance. They've been called the assertive or the aggressive stance. Mm-hmm. And they, if the world's blowing up, will just choose. Like, they'll notice that it's blowing up, but they can also separate really easily from that. Mm-hmm. But they also know that they can change it if they choose to. So this, it's just a very independent independent stance thing. Mm-hmm. And we're future focused.
Okay.
It is so hard as you're talking to not be like, ping, ping, that person, that person, that person. Because I know people who fall in those numbers. I'm like, oh my gosh, that is them.
That makes sense.
It all makes sense. Like, it's so funny. Or it's easy to be like, oh my gosh, that's what my friend is, or that's what my husband is, as you're talking. Mm-hmm.
Or even myself. So right.
Yeah. It's hard not to want to, like you said, put the number on everybody. But I'm going to work on that. Because it is personal, because I wouldn't want somebody to be like, oh my gosh, that is so you. And you're like, what? That's me? No. Yeah. You know, anyway.
But it's fun. What is so fun is if you get into a group that's committed to doing this type of exploration and work together, because then you all have permission, right, to ask those questions of each other, to point it out, to notice it. And that is really fun when you share a common language and you have permission to kind of go that level of deep with people.
Yeah.
Have you ever done the color personality? Are you into that at all?
I don't. That's the one I probably know the least amount about. Okay. And I'm pretty sure that I'm high red.
Okay.
Okay.
Which, right, goes with assertiveness.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Independent.
Yeah. So I'm probably at the same level of knowing about colors as I am Enneagram. I mean, I know, but I'm not like, I haven't dove deep into any of them. But I can see like, where certain colors fall with certain numbers. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like this group of like red will fall with this number or whatever the case. But yeah, personality tests are the personality discovery is all very interesting. And the older I get, and I think it's since I've become a parent, I'm even more interested. Because I don't know. I just feel like you know more about how you react to good and bad. And how you want to react to good and bad. And so how do I, knowing myself, you know, shift my feelings? I don't know. It's hard because you want to be true to yourself. But really, the whole point of this is to better yourself, in my opinion.
Well, you want to be true to yourself. But I think it's really hard to be true to yourself if we're not given the tools to really observe, self-observe ourselves and to be able to make sense of what that is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is so true.
Yes.
This has been
so
fun.
I just feel like I could talk forever about this. But if there is an adoptee or an adoptive parent out there, or do y'all work with birth moms as well or not as much?
It's not the part of the triad that I know the best. And so generally, no. But if a birth mom reached out and needed to be connected or wanted to do private work, we just don't have a big enough base. Like, I have a base of adoptees that I work, we have a small group. And of course, the adoptive parent community that we've created is our largest. There's just not a base
That's awesome.
for moms. But I'll coach anyone, even if you're not in the adoption consolation.
Oh, awesome. So yeah, that was my question, was like, how can people find you? How can people connect with you, maybe get involved in one of these groups you're talking about, or even if someone wants coaching from you, what's the best way to get in contact with you about that?
So for Enneagram stuff on Instagram, I talk about really whatever comes to my mind, but it's either Enneagram or adoption usually. And I'm at Melissa Corkum with an underscore. But if you get as far as the Melissa Corkum, like, you'll see, and it'll pop up and it'll be really, really easy to find. We have an Instagram account as AdoptionWise as well. And so you can go to @AdoptionWise. And I would say, if you're listening to this and you thought at any point in time you were ever following the Adoption Connection, which is our former name, I inconveniently got our account erased right around the time we were changing our branding. So some people thought it was kind of on purpose. It definitely wasn't. So it's very possible that you thought you were following us and now you're not anymore. And so you should go find AdoptionWise and refollow us.
Awesome. Yes.
That is funny. Thanks for clarifying that. Yeah. I mean, this conversation has been so fun, and I feel like there is so much more that we could talk about. So I feel like we just need to, like, put it in the books that there's going to be a part two of this.
Yeah. Let's
because do it. There's so much more to dive into, and I feel like I have a book of questions now too that it would be fun to dive into. Yeah. And this blocking, what were you saying in the beginning? Say it again.
Blocked care.
Yeah. That is a whole new term to me, to be honest with you.
So in short, and this can be the teaser for, you know, whatever other episode we have to do on blocked care.
Absolutely.
It's a self-protective mechanism that happens in a caregiver's nervous system. So we serve mostly adoptive parents when there's excessive stress, which could be lots of different things. So this isn't specific to the adoption community. It's just that's generally who we serve. So, I mean, you guys think, like, your community, excessive stress. Like, that could be, you know, divorce, sickness, job loss, and it could also be parenting multiple kids with a lot of challenging behaviors, high needs. Then your nervous system, if we're not caring for it well, kind of goes into the subconscious protective stance mechanism.
Yeah.
And so what happens is parents feel like they've lost the compassion part, the joy part of parenting. Mm-hmm. So these are parents who maybe are robotically still parenting, but they're feeling extremely discouraged, possibly in despair, maybe apathetic, maybe resentful, a lot of those things.
Yes.
So, so we have a coaching group for that. And within that, we also do parent coaching and Enneagram coaching. So that's our coaching community covers all three of those bases if you're an adoptive parent. So if you're an adoptee or other part of the adoption triad and want to do Enneagram work, if you go to my Instagram, you'll see information about that. But if you're an adoptive parent and you're just like, I need connection, I need to know what to do about the behaviors, I need all the tools, we do it all inside that community. And it's called Reclaim Compassion inside our coaching community.
Awesome.
That is awesome.
Yes.
Thank you for all that. So this is going to be continued. So listeners who are just like dying for more, we will continue this and we will let you know when. But before we wrap up completely this episode, since this is the Funding Love podcast, we want to know what you are loving right now in life in this season, whether it be something you're doing, something you're enjoying, whatever it is. What are you, Melissa,
what's
loving right now?
Sparking love in you right now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, our family kind of hobby that we picked up recently is indoor bouldering.
What?
What is that?
So it's like rock climbing without a harness.
Whoa.
So it's most generally lower. It's usually lower than like 20, 25 feet. We haven't tried outdoor bouldering yet, but we go to a bouldering gym where there's lots of different problems, lots of different levels.
Oh my gosh, how fun is that?
And it's been great on so many levels. Like, I had gotten to a point where I felt like I needed to do more strength training stuff. I'm getting to be a woman of a certain age where people are telling you have to, like, you know, focus on those types of things. And as a 7, like I mentioned, I don't really like hard things. Like, I like things to be fun. And one of our kids started bouldering and they were like, you guys would like this. This sounds fun. And so we were like, I don't know. It's expensive. It's far away, whatever, but it's addicting. And it's working on upper body strength with, like, by climbing. And it's so fun. It's been really good for one of our kids who has a lot of other delays, but he has really great gross motor skills And he'd been doing Ninja Warrior stuff for a while. He was kind of like phasing out of that. So he picked up bouldering, and it's a place where he feels like he's more with the, you know, with the crew. And it's good, like proprioceptive, like for kids who need sensory stuff. It's bilateral movement. It's like spatial awareness and physical. Like, it's just super fun.
Mental and physical health.
Mental and physical health. That is so cool. All of the things. It's like, it's mentally challenging.
And spiritual therapy, all of the things.
Yeah, all of the things. It's very communal. Yeah, I don't know. So
awesome. That is so fun. I can't even tell you if I have a bouldering gym near me.
Now I feel like I have to Google it. I know.
They're popping up in a lot of places, and my guess is y'all have them.
Oh, I'm sure we do. We must. But gosh, Melissa, it was fun getting to know you, diving into this conversation. Can't wait for more. And thank you, listeners, for tuning into this episode of the Funding Love Podcast. We'll see y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Funding Love Podcast. We are a crowdfunded nonprofit, which means that people like you can help make a lasting impact in the lives of adoptive families and birth moms. At Funding Love, we create post-adoption experiences that strengthen bonds, build community, and restore people. And when you partner with us, whether that is giving online, signing up to become a monthly donor, or simply buying merchandise from our shop, you are Funding Love.